Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to the Football Diary Podcast, wherever you're watching or listening to us. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's that weird time of the season, isn't it, really, where some teams have got absolutely nothing to play for and some have got everything to play for. So I'm joined now by Dave. We're both itching for the season to end as Man United fans because it's been absolutely horrendous. How are you, Dave? How's things been with you at your end? And how's your season apart from United so far?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just glad that there's, you know, plenty still to play for a lot of the teams. I know we've had seasons in the past where we're sort of struggling to find things to, you know, keep ourselves entertained over. But thankfully, obviously, there's still a title race on and there's still relegation battle and intriguing.
Well, we've got loads to sort of think about with permutations for that still. But obviously, the transfer window is looming too, and already clubs are making inroads for that. So we'll talk about the big one so far, which is Erling Haaland, and the impact that will have on the Premier League and on Man City, of course. But first of all, some optimism for United fans. You were at the Youth Cup final, weren't you, this week? What an occasion that was. Talk to me a little bit about what you saw.
Oh, brilliant. And I think, you know, in terms of a spectacle and Youth Cup final, just mentioning the 2019, which was the last one that fans were able to attend, there was only, I think, around 6,000 fans there, and which is, you know, when you think about in terms of the attendance of this one, 67,000 puts it into perspective and what an occasion that must be for those lads on the pitch, you know, even if we talk about, and I think the thing is at Man United with players, there's a lot of pressure on us to kind of produce talent and bring players through for the youth team, and you know, you think about the decades that we've done it for, and even if a lot of these lads don't make it, you know, we're lucky enough to really produce the amount of players that we do, not necessarily just to the Premier League, but obviously all through the lower leagues, Championship, League One, League Two. They go on to have such a great career at a professional level. It's a game that they'll remember for the rest of their lives, I'm sure, and it could be the biggest crowd they'll ever play in front of.
Potentially, yeah. 67,000 or so, wasn't it, at Old Trafford for that? What an amazing spectacle that was. So hopefully some optimism for the future for United fans looking forward. But starting with Man City, unfortunately, Dave, big news that they've signed Erling Haaland. They've paid his release clause, which I think is 60 million euros, which is peanuts, really, for a player of his calibre. Harry Kane seems to be obviously dead in the water now, so they've made a move for probably one of the biggest stars of world football at the minute, especially one for the future Ballon d'Ors, I think, now that the Messi-Ronaldo era is over. What does this mean for Man City, and what does this mean for the Premier League to see Haaland in sky blue? I mean, it's quite frightening on the face of it, isn't it, really?
It is, but also we know how good a team Man City are, even without Haaland and without a striker, which, you know, they play. They've played much of their season. It's only just recently that Gabriel Jesus has been getting a lot more games and featuring more prominently where they've been playing a striker in there just because of the fixture build-up. Yeah, obviously, let's wait and see. He obviously is a huge talent. A lot of people saying, you know, he's a generational player. But he's also carries a bit of an injury record. This obviously, his injury record this season has not been particularly great. So whether that he might carry that through and he's just quite injury prone, I suppose we'll see. But they've got him at the snip, obviously, in terms of the goals that he's going to bring. You know, 51 million is, you know, brilliant in this market. And it will just be exciting to see, you know, as a Premier League fan, to see what he can bring. Obviously, not going to be too great to see as a United fan, but and City will always win games. You know, as good as they are now, the amount of players that they've got in, you know, the amount of depth they have in every position all over the pitch, they will always win games. So it's arguable to see how much it will improve them.
Yeah, I think we said that about Jack Grealish as well. It's £100 million on a player that kind of has already got players in his position playing the same role. So But this is not a player that City have had since Sergio Aguero kind of started his decline. So you can see goals coming. And I was trying to sort of envisage what kind of role Haaland would play in that team. And think of all those half chances that are trickling across the 6-yard box and nobody's on the end of them because they're all out wide or they're all waiting for a chance on the edge of the area. Haaland's probably going to be there to finish him off now, isn't he? And I think Jurgen Klopp said a similar thing, that it is a very good signing for City because there is no one in that box, in that 6-yard area, waiting to pounce. There's no one with that kind of turn of pace and power that he's got to get on the end of any balls that are coming through. So I think that kind of element to City's game will be intriguing to see. I think it's definitely levelled up City as a team now. I mean, they're a formidable team anyway. They've got such a strong squad. But he's kind of like a Galactico kind of signing, and they've not really done any players like that yet. For all the money they've spent, is the first sign of kind of global name that they've had. So what does that mean for the likes of Liverpool and Klopp? I mean, they can't dream of spending that kind of money on wages. I think it's reported to be about £400,000 a week salary, which is, I think, about what De Bruyne is on at the minute as well. So not crazy money by superstar standards, but still an expensive deal. Does this leave the rest of us dead in the water then as rivals?
Well, you know, it's always going to be difficult to get to that standard for any sort of aspiring club in that top four fold, the likes of Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal, you know, obviously United, long way off, but you know, that's what this league is all about. And hopefully we'll get back to the days of where there will be, you know, three or four contenders. Obviously, there's the big two at the top at the minute. And I know we say it's a big six, but it's not really. You know, the rest of the clubs are a long, long way off. And I even put Chelsea in that sort of bracket at the minute. And, you know, the sort of form that they're in, they're not looking great. They seem to be able to turn it on in some of the big games and the big fixtures, which we've seen Thomas Tuchel do. You know, time at Chelsea, but I think Liverpool, it'll be interesting to see what happens, and obviously Salah and his contract situation and whatever has happening there. Mane's been linked to Bayern Munich as well. Whether they will look to pastures new will be interesting. But you know, something that Liverpool have done really well is filled, you know, those gaps and areas where they've needed to add a little bit of depth in, obviously Luis Diaz and Jota in the past. They're clearly targeting the right players and recruiting, you know, very carefully, not making any mistakes, which we've seen them make a lot in the transfer market in the past, and they seem to have sort of fixed that.
I think my only concern, if I was a Liverpool fan, would be if they don't win the Champions League, for example, and they finish the season with two domestic cups and that's kind of it, that would feel like a disappointment, wouldn't it, after the talk of a quadruple. So how many players would then be, I don't know, ready for a new challenge? The likes of Mane and Salah, how many of them would think, do you know what, I've done all I can here now. You know, they've not won the Champions League. If that comes to it, where next? That's going to be an expensive couple of players to replace if they do decide to move on. I don't think they've got the capacity to replace them in the same transfer window, have they?
I think in today's, you know, in today's world, that's completely normal though. They're obviously getting to the age, you know, 28, 29. Van Dijk as well, let's not forget, they get into that sort of age when they're probably going to get the last sort of big contract, and fair play, you know, if that's what they desire, that they want. You know, they want to be set financially, if they're not already, then they will be looking, you know, maybe another club. And let's not forget, there's so many clubs out there that are competitive in Europe, likes of Real Madrid. You know, they're not even, well, you wouldn't say, you know, if at the start of the season, you probably would have said, I'd be surprised if they get to the Champions League final. They've managed to do it somehow. They've obviously jumped over quite a few hurdles to get there, but they've got there, and that will be attractive to these sort of players going and playing in Europe. The likes of Barcelona, who we thought were miles off it, have managed to sort of turn it around slightly, and they look in a better position than they were. know, it's Spain is a big attraction to these players, so it wouldn't surprise me if it happened.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for the Premier League, I think. Haaland's arrival really raises the bar, I think, for where these top teams go in the transfer market next. And I think the likes of Man United, Tottenham, Arsenal, the teams on the outskirts of the top four, now suddenly look a lot further behind, don't they? But on that note, actually, with United, obviously Erik ten Hag's appointment has been confirmed. We're waiting for this final game to be out of the way because it's been such a dismal finish to the season for United fans, hasn't it? But Ten Hag's arrival has been a bit of a ray of sunshine, a bit of hope. And he's obviously fresh off the back of winning the Eredivisie in Holland this week. But there's already talk of what kind of team he's looking to build, what kind of style he might play, what kind of players he thinks that people are speculating would suit his system. Now, you'd imagine Donny van de Beek would get some kind of starring role in his team. Who else will benefit from Ten Hag United from the team that's currently there, Dave? Who do you think is going to be most invigorated by his arrival?
It's a really difficult one to think really and make that decision. I think in terms of players that are there, you say about Van der Beek, you put one and two and two together and you say he might have a role in there, but there are obviously other players in his sort of position that we have, obviously the likes of Bruno, if he wants to play in like a 10 position, yeah. Then, you know, he might fancy Bruno over Van der Beek. So, but obviously there's a lot of murmurs in the media about him being interested in De Ligt and Frankie de Jong again coming back. And if he can, the thing is, he just needs to find the system and he needs to find a role for the players that we have. I think it's really important that we kind of figure out who's here for the stay and who's kind of on the way out and not interested in putting the effort in into fighting for a place, because there's just been so much toxicity really over the course of this season. It just seems as though that the rats will be
be taken out. Yeah, they will be sort of dealt with. And I think that's to the credit of the interim manager Ralf Rangnick. He has actually called out those players quite publicly, hasn't he? Or has at least hinted at the kind of people that are leaking things from the dressing room. Jesse Lingard's obviously had quite a public outing from Paul Scholes as being somebody who's been leaking information. So I think there's a few players who know their future's finished at the club, and that's got to be a good thing. But they're talking about adding the likes of, I think, Frankie de Jong, which again seems to make sense, for about 60, 70 million euros or something like that. But does that even make sense if we don't address the issues we had to begin with, which are defensive midfield, probably another centre-back, because Maguire might not be the kind of player that Ten Hag would want. Strangely, I think Victor Lindelof might be. I think he might be the kind of defender he could lean on and would trust to play the ball out from the back. But what are your thoughts?
From what I read is he wants two midfielders, a versatile forward and a centre-back. So that's four players to begin with. Not even addressing the fullback positions. But again, we've got to remember this is going to be a long-term project. It's not going to be something you can fix in one window. Going to be too many outgoings and too many, you know, incomings. I'd expect a minimum of four players probably to come in through the door. And again, we've got to remember that it was the likes of Guardiola when he came into Man City. He couldn't change it all in one season. He had a couple of difficult seasons making the adjustment, and he did have to do a bit of tinkering. Obviously, he had a few players come in that he decided weren't quite right for for big sums of money, 40, 50 million.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to be the same with Ten Hag. We're going to have to give a lot of patience to the new man, and it feels like a big change at the club. I know obviously a lot of animosity around the owners and previous board members that have kind of gone out the door, but I think the fans will give him a lot of patience, and he seems to have been the fan favourite player favourite for the job, and he's got the job. And for everything that I've seen, he seems to be saying all the right things, mentioning, obviously, you know, he's not just accepted the job. He's wanted to know the details that that he's going to kind of obviously be in charge of, and ensure that he's able to have control of the team and obviously transfers and have a big say in who's going to come in. And I think that's really encouraging to hear, because we've, you know, there's been past decisions that have made been made at the club. Like you mentioned, the likes of Fred, Van der Beek, we don't know who's actually brought these players in, because it just seems to have been not on the level of Everton, that we're kind of finding square pegs for round holes, but it seems to be such a sort of vast difference in play styles. And it's, yeah, he's gonna have to find the right formula to compete, because like you mentioned, there's so many clubs that are such a high level now. I'll mention then Chelsea aren't particularly performing well, but they're million miles away from what we are, even that, and that says a lot for obviously how they're performing in the league at the moment.
With regards to United's expectations then for next season, you said obviously it's a long-term project. Gary Neville and Roy Keane were saying on Sky Sports that, and Jamie Carragher as well actually, that this is more comparable to sort of Jurgen Klopp when he took over Liverpool and the state they were in. You know, they were still getting to finals, they were still competing for top four when he arrived, but they were signing terrible players, wasting money, and it took him a good two or three transfer windows to establish Liverpool. And Gary Neville chimed in and said, actually, this is more like when Gerard Houllier or Rafa Benitez took over, because United have regressed that much that they need a 10-year sort of span to get back to the top again. Is that an exaggeration from Neville? Do you think United are a decade away still from competing for the Premier League? Or is it a case of maybe 2 or 3 years, United should be looking for not just establishing top four, but challenging for the title again?
Well, I think Liverpool were a better team when they were under Houllier rather than when Jurgen Klopp came in. Obviously, you can talk about Liverpool's Champions League win in, you know, 2005, and they obviously got to the final against AC Milan again. And you've got, really, they, you know, they had a bit of luck along the way to achieving those sort of feats. You can say they've obviously got to finals, but I felt under the likes of Houllier, and they were always able to compete. You felt they were at a level where, yeah, they weren't as good as those Arsenal teams and Man United teams. I don't think they ever felt they were at that level to compete for Premier League titles, but they had games where they felt like they could get the better of, you know, Man United. They could get the better of Arsenal or Chelsea. And United, it doesn't feel like that at the minute. It doesn't.
United finished second last season, but then they went and signed Ronaldo, Varane and Sancho. So we were predicting not just top four, but kind of comfortable top four, weren't we? And it's not turned out to be that way. And we know now it's because the culture of the club is so, so rotten that I think Solskjaer now looks like he's done a great job at his time here to get that from that bunch of players and that team to get them actually performing together cohesively, because right now they're looking absolute shambles. But you have those sort of world-class players, you expect to be competing still, and they were second last season. So is this a reflection of where we are at the moment, or is it just a blip because it's so bad? And if it's just a blip, whereabouts are we looking to aim next season if Ten Hag makes the right moves in the transfer market? What's realistic?
You mentioned there, obviously, last season we came second. You've got to remember that all of our players were happy and comfortable playing under Solskjaer. They enjoyed playing under him. You could see, you know, from the signs of being on the pitch. We all mentioned that the areas where, you know, we lacked were in the coaching areas. We didn't seem to have any sort of play style. We did lack on a lot of sort of individual brilliance. You can't really question, you know, the heart and soul of the team until, obviously, the last few months. And, obviously, even then, the snakes came out, and there were obviously murmurs in the media saying the coaching wasn't good enough. You know, they'd make there's doubts about the coaching staff, this and that, and we've seen it all again with, you know, in this temporary Rangnick era. So I think that's questionable. You say there whether we were really actually that much better. I don't think that's the case. I just think the players were happier under that regime. I just don't think they're happy now because they're not, you know, they're not having their egos massaged, so to speak. I'm not going to say all of them because we know that's not the case. But there is a few in there that I think need to get off my horse, so to speak. And it's going to be a big reality check, obviously, when the new man comes in. And obviously, there was talks today saying that, and this is let's not forget, this is the day after, you know, Ajax have just won the league. Apparently, there's been a meeting between John Murta and Erik ten Hag and his new assistant. Apparently, Steve McLaren is actually going to be on in the backroom staff. There was a recruitment meeting about incomings, outgoings in Amsterdam. So that just tells you how, you know, serious and professional he is. And about this was one day after it went, you know, winning the title with Ajax, he's focusing already on what's to come at United. And that's a big contrast into what we've had in the past, where David Moyes has come gone on holiday for a month as soon as he's got the job and then come back and had a very sort of the plans have been up in the air, and you know, we're scrambling around and getting Fellaini on a deadline day deal. So it's a breath of fresh air, and it's something I'm sure all United fans are just so happy to hear. And let's just hope that, you know, that we'll see the fruits of it.
I think that's the thing as a United fan. I want to see a defined style. I want to see what Ten Hag can coach this team to do. And like you said, we've got to be realistic about the amount of transfers, not only we can afford to make, but also should make. Because if you do too many changes in one season, it's just going to be counterproductive, isn't it? So I do think Ten Hag needs to do a lot of coaching. He needs to have the right backroom team behind him. And it seems like he's got that, or he's got his mind set on certain people that can fulfill what he needs to get his coaching staff set up correctly. That's the music to my ears. I'd love to see players like Fred really coached properly to play a certain role, because they've all been played in so many different positions. And Van der Beek as well, obviously, he's versatile, but he's so much better when he's got a role. Sancho, again, so much better when he knows where he's going to be, which flank he's going to be committed to, when he's going to cut in. And these players need that instruction drilled into them. I think Rangnick tried to instill some instruction over the last few games, but clearly none of the players were paying any attention to what he was coaching them, because they've got their eyes on the exit or on next season. So yeah, clean slate, cannot wait. Top four's gone, obviously. But I don't know, would you still want European football next season at this rate, or would you be happy to just drop into eighth place and miss it altogether?
Yeah, I can see the pros and cons of both, you know. I can see sort of both narratives, really, in terms of getting into Europe. I've not really got any interest in being in the Conference League, to be honest, you know, playing the teams that we will be in. I see that as sort of, I don't want to be disrespecting the competition itself, but that should be sort of opportunity that the younger players are getting if it's a Conference League. If it's Europa League, you know, he might come into and think, you know, winning a trophy is going to be is a big step, and a big start for him, really, if he comes in and wins some silverware. Let's not forget how strong the Europa League is this season, and some of the teams that have, you know, obviously the likes of RB Leipzig, Dortmund, you know, West Ham have done really well, and, you know, are no mugs themselves. So I can see the benefits of both routes. I'll obviously have a lot more time on the training pitch if we don't get Europe. So I'll probably side with that. I'd probably rather not, but we might not even get Europe, to be honest. Knowing how we've gone.
I know.
I don't think I want to count chickens, really.
Well, I think this is the season the United fans stopped doing that, to be fair. But top four, obviously, would be nice next season, I think, is just
we don't deserve Europe, I've been playing. And the thing is, I don't even think there's teams in there that are massively better than United, like the players that the likes of Spurs and Arsenal. It's been a competition who's been the least bad, basically, the least worst team. Like, everyone's had cock-ups. And it's been there up for grabs for the last 3 or 4 months, you know, and there's been very, very little in it. But it's been a case of just teams dropping points in silly games, and it's been a consistent theme now. So,
Well, that brings me on to the top four itself, then, because obviously it's the North London Derby today as we speak on the Thursday, so that will make it a bit clearer. But regardless of the result, who do you think is the favourite to get top four at the moment? Who deserves it as well?
I think the best team out of Arsenal and Spurs is Spurs. I think they're the better team, personally. There's been a few ups and downs over the last few months. Obviously, we've seen them lose in games where you wouldn't have expected, likes of Burnley, when they obviously got that really positive result against Man City. They went and obviously lost against Burnley. And those are the sort of games I speak about, so I was mentioning then, where where games have cost them, which really shouldn't have. But when I have seen Spurs play well this season, and you know, we mentioned that they played Liverpool the other week, I thought they played really well against Liverpool and probably should have gone and won that game with the chances that they did have. I just feel like they have something extra in attack that Arsenal don't have. I will say that Arsenal, you know, to their credit, they have really tightened up at the back and looked a lot more organised, a lot more difficult to break down. They, you know, they've been a bit comical in those sort of areas, and they're sort of we have enjoyed a little bit of comedy as United fans in the last few years. Arsenal at the back been absolutely terrible at times, but to their credit, Arteta seems to have found a remedy for that. And they look a lot more organised there. And they just look more structured. There's more of a structure to them than there has been in the past. And I think you've got to give Mikel Arteta a lot of credit there.
I think you're right. The Spurs front line is really good. If they can hang on to Kulusevski, which it looks like they will, that's a great front three, isn't it? It's the best front three they've had since a few years, since the Pochettino era, isn't it, really? But Eddie Nketiah has come good for Arsenal in the last few games. Do you think he could play a role next season for them? Or do you think they still need to go out and actually sign a decent centre-forward to replace Aubameyang?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They need to make a signing. Like, you can, for instance, you know, United, we've got Ronaldo up front, but we clearly need probably a couple of more attackers in there to take sort of the pressure off of him, and not relying on that same striker to produce the goods every single game. And that's what Arsenal need. They do need another front man, I feel. And I'm sure it's encouraging for them to see, you know, Nketiah really kind of stepping up to the plate the last few games. Obviously, he scored a few important goals. I think there was there are a lot of question marks over him and whether he's good enough to cut it at Premier League standard, but there's now obviously rumours of him looking to sign a new deal, which is obviously great for him and great for England actually as well. But with the likes of obviously the options that England team have, it will be difficult for him to get into that setup. But yeah, really great to see. We're still sort of waiting, I think, for a few of the players really to kind of. You talk about the likes of Saka, Emil Smith Rowe has done it in spells at times. Obviously, Martinelli looks like a great talent as well.
Odegaard's fantastic, though. I think Odegaard's definitely sort of captain material for the club.
Yeah, plenty of reason to be, you know, excited as an Arsenal fan.
But they're after, apparently, Gabriel Jesus as well. I don't know if you've seen that, but he apparently is in talks and, you know, Man City aren't averse to selling him to Arsenal. They don't see him as a title rival. So he could be a decent acquisition for them, couldn't he? He kind of fills that role. And with those players around him, I think that would work quite nicely.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see him going there, to be fair. And he is the sort of player that I think Arteta would like. And obviously, he's worked with him at Man City as well. He'll know what he can offer. So I'm sure he will be part of the pull if those talks are serious. He'll know what he'll be getting from that sort of player. Works hard, can finish. There's plenty of room for development. I think we kind of expected a little bit more from Jesus when he came into Man City, and he's been there for a while now, hasn't he? We spoke about actually last week on the pod, and I think he's sort of lacked probably the time on the pitch that he would have liked to sort of, you know, develop in the way he would have liked. But that's just down to how much, you know, talent that City have in those attacking areas. So it'll be interesting to see if that one comes off, and I could see him doing well in that Arsenal team.
Yeah, I think so. And I think with Haaland's arrival, they've got Alvarez as well, Man City, haven't they? It's difficult to see where he fits in on a regular basis. I think we were always saying that once Aguero left, it would be his chance to shine. And he's not really been the kind of goal scorer we thought he would be. So, yeah, decent acquisition for Arsenal if it goes ahead. But Tottenham look, in your opinion, favourites for top four, you're saying?
I think Arsenal are favourites. Because are they 4 points behind, I think, with two games to play, is it? Or is it three games?
Before this North London derby, yeah, it's a four-point cushion. But, I mean, if Arsenal win that game, what does that mean, you know? What does that do to the table? What does that do to the rest of the season?
Arsenal win that game, it's over. It's finished. Yeah. Tottenham need to win to stay in it. Anything can happen, obviously. You know, we've seen how inconsistent the teams have been. I can't remember who they've got on the last game of the season, but we've seen what happens when, you know, the pressure's off and a lot of clubs have got playing with a lot of freedom at the minute. Teams that don't have much to play for. So it'll be interesting. I still feel as though Arsenal will probably just about get over the line, but I just think Spurs are the better team, but it'll be an exciting one to watch.
Okay, we've touched on the Tottenham's performance against Liverpool, which obviously took points off Liverpool in the title race. I mean, there's an actual clear gap now at the top of the table, and it looks like Man City's to lose. You've got to say they've responded pretty well, City, to being knocked out of the Champions League, haven't they? They scored 10 goals in their last two outings in the Premier League, which is unreal. Central to all of that has been Kevin De Bruyne, who's just been absolutely fantastic. He got 4 goals the other night as well. Do they need Erling Haaland at this rate? It feels like they've got so many goal-scoring threats, but De Bruyne must be like rubbing his hands with glee thinking about the prospects of linking up with Haaland next season. But he's so good, isn't he, this year? He's probably my favourite for player of the year. He's been so good. I mean, we talked about players being quite streaky this season, but he's been pretty solid, pretty consistent. What are your thoughts on De Bruyne's last season this year with City? He's been crazy good, hasn't he?
Yeah, and in his last few games, he's been ridiculously good. And it hurts to say as a United supporter, but you can't help but enjoy watching him play. When he's in that sort of form, he's probably the best player in the league. In this game, that third goal was ridiculous. Like, it was just an absolute rocket into the bottom corner. And a couple of them, you know, that he was just in the right place to finish. But we've seen he's got that trait of being in the right place at the right time as well. When he plays a little bit more advanced, I feel as though sometimes he plays a little bit deeper, sits a little bit deep and sort of dictates. But we've seen when he advances a little bit more, he can add more goals to his game. He's had such a great season. There's been a few players in that City team. I think the likes of Phil Foden's done really well this season. He's been a real key player, chipped in with some important goals. Raheem Sterling's played well in the last couple of games, scored a couple of important goals. I think you've got to mention João Cancelo. I think he's been an absolute revelation in terms of how they play going forward. He offers so much. He could be a winger. He's that good going forward. Technically, brilliant. Obviously, he's got a great cross. He can score goals. Yeah. I think it'd be a tight one, to be honest. That wouldn't surprise me if Man City's player of the year. I think it'll be a tight vote between Cancelo and De Bruyne. You talk about right player of the year. The attacker's always going to take the award home, and we've seen that, you know, in countless awards and over the years. The Ballon d'Or, it's always Messi or Ronaldo. You know, the likes of Modric, you know, the players who sort of take a back seat in terms of taking the plaudits, they tend to be handicapped a little bit, I think, in that aspect. And I think he probably will be up there, but you've obviously got the likes of obviously Mane and Salah at Liverpool who've played really well. Son, who's had such a strong finish for Spurs at the end of the season. We've seen his sort of form has been a little bit sort of mixed throughout the season, but we've seen him finish really strongly, and we've seen how devastating a player he can be. It'll be a tight one, and it's not as straightforward. I think there's been a few seasons in the past where it's been quite a straightforward vote. So you could pick any one of five players that, if Man City win the league, which is looking like it's heading that way, then you might just give it to De Bruyne, I think.
Is that your thought now, that the last two games of the season, Liverpool aren't going to have the opportunity to catch up now? Man City are not going to drop any points. I mean, looking at the running, Liverpool have got Southampton and Wolves, which seems, you know, quite a cushy running, but City have got West Ham and Villa. So can you see City dropping any points there?
I can't see them. The thing is, obviously, they've got a three point cushion. So even if they do drop points in one of those games, they've got, I think, is it a seven goal?
Seven extra goals to goal difference for them.
So even if they lose a game, which, you know, is kind of expecting quite a lot, I think, really, of either West Ham or Villa, you know, no disrespect to those teams. But we thought this Wolves game last night was going to be a difficult one. We thought that a lot of people earmarked that as, you know, the two banana skins in that game and the West Ham game, and they made it an absolute walk in the park. And I think a lot of people have been speaking and saying, oh, you know, pundits have come out and said, oh, that will have knocked them for six. You know, that exit in the Champions League, that bizarre exit to Real Madrid. And we've had bizarre exits over the last few years in Europe. You know, the likes of Monaco. And I've said, they always react in good teams. The teams at the top, champions, always respond to a bad result. And we know, as United fans, in the times, obviously, Fergie was, you know, at the helm, and we always came back. And it's something that the good teams do. The likes of Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea have been doing it this season, to be fair. At times, they've come back on the back of a negative result and got a win. So I never anticipated that they would fall apart. It seems unreasonable to think that. I think just how the team they are, how well set they are. So I don't know what you think, but
No, I think the same. I think the only kind of potential distraction is in Liverpool's season, to be honest. I think Man City are probably more likely to be more focused on the league now, because that's their sole focus, whereas Liverpool have got the FA Cup final, haven't they, still? So, you know, there's an element of fatigue there for Liverpool, and they might still drop more points, I think. Although Southampton and Wolves are absolutely horrendous form at the moment, and neither of them care.
If you look at the two teams in the league, Man City's form has been far better than Liverpool's. Liverpool have been doing just enough to get over the line. You know, but there were moments in that Villa game where Villa, you know, yeah, if they had the Danny Ings of old on that pitch, they could have, you know, they could have won that game. He had a couple of really good chances where he probably should have scored. He was one-on-one with Alisson. I don't know what happened. His final touch, his first touch disappeared. And obviously there's been a few games recently where they've probably been a little bit fortunate in some of the decisions that have, you know, gone the way of themselves. And so I think, you know, I think Liverpool are probably more likely, really, at the minute. If you look at the performances of the teams, Man City have just been blowing teams away week after week. And I can't remember the last time. What was the last game they lost? I can't even think.
No, they just don't drop points. That's the thing in the Premier League. They're so clinical, aren't they? That if they can replicate that in Europe, they're going to be one of those teams that are going to dominate for a while. But we'll see what the season pans out like. But yeah, they look pretty unstoppable domestically at the moment. But the title race looks fairly safe now, barring some catastrophic loss for Man City. But the bottom of the table suddenly looks, again, completely different. And Leeds have been dragged right into the bottom three, and it looks like they deserve to be there. They've lost two games in a row, two sendings off in the last three games. Discipline seems to have gone out the window, which has given Burnley a bit of a kind of an eye on the exit from the relegation zone now. They've got a game in hand, I believe, which obviously counts for nothing. I think Burnley have taught us that this season. But Leeds are looking in trouble. There's not much of the season left, and they've literally just dropped into the bottom three. Are they sort of really in danger now, Dave? Or is it still sort of Burnley are the favourites to go down? Everton look fairly safe now. They've sort of put a bit of a late run together. But Leeds is a big one, isn't it?
Yeah. It's going to be a battle, I think, between Burnley and Leeds by the looks of it. Burnley have sort of lost that momentum they had when the caretaker manager came in. Mike Jackson seemed to have sort of given them a bit of a lift, but they've gone kind of the opposite way in recent weeks. Leeds have just been all over the place the last couple of games. A lot of them lack discipline, as we've seen with the two red cards they've had in the last couple of games. So I think it's going to be between them, between those two teams. I think Everton will probably just have enough to get over the line, in spite of how bad they've been themselves. So I wouldn't like to pick a team, really. As a United fan, you probably wouldn't be displeased from seeing Leeds go down, but no, it's surprising.
I don't mind.
No. It's a surprising one, really, where you saw them obviously earlier on in the season. They you know, they weren't really kind of in danger as such. There are other teams down there that you thought, you know, the likes of Brentford at times have kind of been down there as well. So
yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it, this season? And the quality of the Premier League below the top three has been so poor, hasn't it? So up and down, so inconsistent. Teams taking points off each other. So, yeah, I think when this season's been and gone, you'd think next season would be a more straightforward one. But no, there's a World Cup bang in the middle of it as well. So even stranger times ahead, I think, for next season. Anyway, for now, Dave, that's pretty much everything we've got to talk about, unless you want to chime in with anything else. But I think next week, we've got the pod to talk about the FA Cup final. The Championship playoffs are going to begin next weekend as well, which I think is really intriguing. So it'd be good to see that. And in the Premier League, there's still obviously the matter of relegation and top four to discuss. So yeah, it's that time of the season where there's not much to play for many teams, but it starts to get what Fergie calls squeaky bum time. So what's your standout fixtures for the coming week, Dave? What are you looking forward to the most?
Like you mentioned there, I think I'm most intrigued by these Championship playoffs, especially obviously the drama of, you know, Forest, the Forest Bournemouth game. It looked like Forest were going to do the unthinkable and somehow get automatic promotion, obviously, but the last couple of games have had a bit of a stutter, and obviously they've now found themselves in a really difficult game against Sheffield United. So that'll be a really interesting game, and one I can't wait to watch, actually. And we've seen, you need a little bit of luck, I think, to come through the playoffs. We've seen teams obviously come through and not the favourites, you know, the likes of Huddersfield over the years. Teams like that where they've kind of had a little bit of luck and gone through it. So, yeah, I can't wait for that one, personally.
Yeah, interesting one. Until then, Dave, thank you for joining me. It's been a while since I've been on the pod, so it's good to be back. And yeah, thank you for watching again. If you really enjoy our content, it'd be great to get a subscribe for you on YouTube and also a follow on Spotify for listening on there. But until then, Dave, till next week, thank you for your time. See you soon, mate.
See you later.